This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 401. Can a comic collector of over 25 years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Welcome to Superman Island. Anataz, Dene, Yelre, Mate Poo, Hanging with Mr. Kent, Demons in Therapy, and Vertigo. This is How I Got My Wife to Read Comics for Sunday, April 24th, 2016. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just a reminder, you can go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or subscribe via iTunes where you can leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter @sfppn, check out tumblr.com/blog/sfppn, or call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP. Legends of Tomorrow number 2. Firestorm by Conway, Pensica, Hunter, Dalros, and Breen. Metamorpho by Lopestri, Benning, Sotomayor, and Heisler. Sugar and Spike by Giffen, Evanly, Placencia, and Napoliatano. And Metal Men by Wine, Sinar, Scott, White, and Wands.
Whenever you talk about something that Sotomayor worked on, I always think of the Supreme Court.
Yeah, so do I. So the second issue of this anthology series, with only a minor connection to the TV series, continues. Firestorm continues the basic story from the canceled series, really spending too many pages on this, in my honest opinion.
But do you think that might be just because it's the only one that really connects it to the TV show?
That's my guess.
Yeah.
Metamorpho's story adds another layer with Kanjar Roe, who's a classic JLA villain. Metal Men adds Robot Man and Red Tornado to the mix, along with a truck masquerade that's pretty sweet. But the diamond here continues to be Sugar and Spike. So the first story was about Batman, so we move on to the Man of Steel. And one of the most goofy concepts of the Silver Age, Superman Island.
This did seem kind of goofy.
His first appearance, it was in Action Comics number 224 in 1957. So Superman builds a mysterious island. Think Superman floating up in the water, except it's an island.
Well, I was thinking about Dubai. Like, this is one of the islands they build in Dubai.
Yeah. He stores kryptonite there for some sort of energy experiment. The energy experiment fails, so he throws the island into space. Because in the Silver Age, Superman could do that.
Yeah.
And there's even a 1980s sequel to this story in Action 513, where alien refugees, because this thing is now floating out in space, have made it their home. The bad guys Hive get involved, and Clark takes them out. He then drops the island into a wormhole in order to get it away from the bad guys.
Are the alien refugees still on
it? Yeah.
You
assume they died, but no, apparently not. They were safe somehow going through a wormhole. In any case, Clark asks Sugar and Spike to retrieve the green kryptonite. And when he's asked, why did he build this island in the first place? His response is, well, I was young. Now developers are building condos there. Sugar and Spike find that the construction workers have been taken hostage by a doll with a machine gun. The doll is taken out and the secret cave is found so they can get the kryptonite out. But who was remotely running the doll? What I'm guessing is Toy Woman. This woman remotely has been running the doll and has all these various toys around her.
Okay.
And her last response to all this is, of course you realize this means war. Just a gem of a story. And frankly, I would pay $7.99 for this story alone.
Well,
The other stories are okay. Harley's Little Black Book number 3 by Connor Palmiotti, Linsner, and Hi-Fi. This is Harley's team-up book. Again, as a reminder, this is one of the few DC comics that's ever done You have World's Finest, Superman and Batman, Brave and the Bold, Batman and a guest star, DC Comics Presents, Superman and a guest star, and now Harley gets a team-up book. The special guest star here is Zatanna, whose first appearance was in Hawkman No. 4, 1964. Daughter of Zatara, a Golden Age magician that goes all the way back to Action Comics No. 1.
Wow.
And in fact, back in those days, the idea was going to be, well, Superman will be on the first issue, and then Zatara will be on the next issue. And about three or four issues in, they went, oh, yeah, maybe Superman should be the star of this. She can do actual magic using backwards talk.
Mm-hmm.
And this is more of the classic version than the goth that we saw in Justice League Dark, with the magician's outfit and the top hat and the fishnets, which really fits well with Harley, who is hosting the London Legion of Superheroes, who have to bunk with her since the guest room is occupied by Zatanna, who's doing a gig there. Unfortunately, there's an old Coney Island attraction about to be torn down that's inhabited by three ghosts tormented by a demon, and they need a new place, and Harley's apartment building looks good. Since Harley hallucinates already, she can also see them.
Mm-hmm.
She keeps sticking her head into their
ectoplasmic manifestations.
Yeah. And they're like, stop that. Zatanna and Harley team up. There are multiple costume changes, including a Ghostbusters outfit for Harley. Of course, the demon is Nad Oedid. Dan DiDio backwards. So Zatanna takes Harley to hell to fight the demon, who turns out to be a big fan of Harley's. She agrees to stay with him for 30 days in order to remove the curse on the ghosts. He can only handle her, however, there for a day and sends her back. He's like, please make her go away. I'll give you anything. Really a cute story here. And the artwork is really fantastic.
Okay, so I did read this one, and this wasn't a bad Harley story. You know, I usually don't like them. Mm. I think I'd probably like the team-ups a little bit better, but it was a little fishy when Zatanna did not immediately recognize Harley. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Superman, American Alien number 6 of 7 by Landis and Case. Max Landis continues his miniseries, taking us through the major points in Clark's life. And now he's pretty much the Superman we know, with the cape and the S and the powers. Childhood buddies Pete Ross and Kenny Braverman have taken the bus to Metropolis to see Clark. He takes them to a friend's gallery opening.
Isn't that Jimmy?
Was that supposed to be Jimmy?
I think that was supposed to be Jimmy.
Oh, I didn't recognize him as Jimmy at all. Well, there he has portraits of supervillains. And they end up hanging out at his apartment, and they talk about his Batman encounter. And at one point, for whatever reason, there's a Batman mask sitting around. I don't know, it's a Halloween costume. And I think Kenny, either Kenny or Pete, like goes, puts it on and goes, where's Joker? He jokes about flying to the moon, but they're worried about Clark because he doesn't really have a disguise. Can you never take your glasses off? Because I take my glasses off all the time, and people say, huh, you look just like Superman, huh? He acts like nothing can hurt him. He's been advertising the S because he wants to get in contact somehow.
With his parents.
With his parents. Because at this point, he has no idea what has happened.
Right. So he feels like if the news gets out and somebody sees it and recognizes it, he can learn more about himself.
They're saying, well, what if aliens come and attack because you're broadcasting this? Pete wants him to reach out to the others, the Red Blur in Central City, that scary woman with a lasso in D.C., that fish guy who keeps sinking whaling boats. And this is a nice, although I'm sure this was written long before Batman versus Superman came out, but it's a nice tie-in nonetheless. Clark, who at this point is a little drunk, says Pete is just jealous, and a verbal fight ends with Clark saying, screw you, Pete, and flies toward the moon, but doesn't make it. He's saved by Abin Sur and Tomar Rhee of the Green Lantern Corps, who are just doing their job in Sector 2814. Earth has not yet been officially included or annexed. It just happens to be part of the sector, and we were coming by.
Right, well, because it doesn't actually get included until Abin Sur dies, right?
Exactly. Clark is in a bubble trying to hear them and makes out Kryptonian. Abin Sur hits him with the beam, and he wakes up in his apartment. He then apologizes to Pete, and I guess Kenny went home? Because Kenny just kind of disappears at that point in the story.
Or maybe he's still like hungover in the bathroom or something.
Pete leaves and Clark looks up saying, Krypton. I've said it before. I'll say it again. This is how you write a Superman story.
I'm guessing you'll say it again when the final issue comes out and we talk about it, since we've talked about every single issue of this miniseries.
I think that's right.
Oh, no, it's very good. I will miss it when it's gone. I can only hope that one of the Superman comics in the rebirth lives up to this one.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Season 10, Number 26, from Dark Horse by Gage, Isaacs, Jackson, Starkings, and Betancourt. We're reaching the end of this season. Buffy is desperate to save Dawn and Xander, who had to stay back in a demon dimension. She's shaking down all the local bad guys and snaps when the other Scoobies question her about it. But it seems like Dawn and Xander are doing fine. They've made friends of the locals, and they're showing them how slated roofs work, because there's this acid, really acid rain, and so they all live in caves.
But because, it eats through everything but the stone.
Well, but they're saying, we can't build that because the water, this acid rain pools on the roof. And they're like, well, you could have a slanted roof.
Right. Well,
tell me what this slanted is.
And I really like this because for once it's Xander sort of being the hero, so to speak. He's not the one that's just there for support.
He
gets to be the hero here, along with Dawn, who's like their goddess there.
And he gets the locals to get in touch with their feelings.
Exactly.
There's also an office of Wolfram and Hart there, who let the home office know who has arrived. And I love the headset on the demonic glob.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, this is just an office going on. Buffy is finally convinced to get the council together to decide if the vampire book should be rewritten to change magic. The offering goes off to collect the rest of the council, but it turns out he just goes and kills them and steals their power.
Because the way they wrote the book now was, if one of them is incapacitated, the remaining members share their power. So if he just kills them all, he gets all the power.
Yep, so he's the big bad now. He grabs the book, fights them off, and flies off.
So, does this make you any more ready to watch the series with me, Mark?
That's definitely on my list.
Yeah, it's been on your list since we started reading this.
Well, there was a bombshell at Vertigo this week. DC announced a major restructuring on Thursday. Shelley Bond, Vertigo executive editor and VP, was let go, who has been there almost from the beginning, going back to 1993. She ran the Fable series of books. She also kind of managed the Sandman ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
Senior editor Jamie Rich was put in charge, who only came to Vertigo last year. Was it Dark Horse and Oni Press? So he's very much a short timer. The bigger issue here is that he's reporting directly to DiDio and Lee, making Vertigo no longer an independent part of DC. Now, we've known for a while that the imprint was on life support because their biggest hits are done.
Yeah.
They got little love in the Eisner nominations this week. The CMYK miniseries got a short story nomination. Art Ops got a penciler, inker, and colorist noms, basically for the All Reds. DC, in fact, only got 5 total, including Vertigo. Neither DC nor Marvel did very well at the Eisners this
year.
The recent addition of 12 new Vertigo books didn't make a dent in these terrible numbers. I think it was a bad idea to put out so many at once because they couldn't concentrate the ad money. So it just got spread out among so many that most of them got lost in the shuffle.
Maybe the idea was if you put them all 12 out at once and just promote new Vertigo books rather than promoting each new Vertigo book.
Yeah, it didn't work. I think that was their theory. And the announcement of the Young Animal imprint following really Vertigo's formula does not bode well.
Right. When Vertigo initially came out, they were taking DC characters and reworking them, like Sandman and Black Orchid and Swamp Thing.
Yeah.
I loved those titles, you know. That's what really pulled me in and made me start picking out my own comics.
Now, I did learn, as part of this story that came out, that Vertigo changed their contracts a few years ago, and now the creators give up media rights. which didn't used to be the case. Mm-hmm. So if you're, say, a Robert Kirkman and you have Walking Dead, are you going to go to Image or are you going to go to Vertigo? I think it really seems that the iZombie and Lucifer TV shows may be the only reason Vertigo survived all of this.
Because
mm-hmm. it would look bad to kill it when it shows up in the credits yeah. of these shows. I think Vertigo may need to go to original graphic novels at this point, but we'll just see what happens. But this was a very bad week for Vertigo overall.
Yeah.
And it worries me, especially titles like Astro City, which I, you know, we love. You
right.
know, what happens if Vertigo goes away?
Well, they've shopped it around before.
Yeah.
They can, as long as Vertigo didn't buy the rights to it, but I can't imagine that they would have.
Right. Well, there is no Who's on the Cover this week because last week was Damn You Double Issues!
Yeah, oh well.
Want to remind you to go to sfpodcastnetwork.com to get the feed, other SF podcasts, and blogs, including our From the Pop Culture Bunker video podcast. You can subscribe via iTunes, and please leave us a review.
You can email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, like us at facebook.com/sfppn, follow us on Twitter at SFPPN or check out tumblr.com/blog/SFPPN. Call us at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.